32nd annual Friends of the Riders Touchdown Lottery, back and better than ever. We're well underway now. I'm talking with the president, Tom Shepard. Of course, the early bird draw goes down October 24th, so you might as well get in on the early bird draw, right, Tom?
Right. We got 17 prizes that we're going to give away that day on October 24th, worth about $119,000. Somebody's going to win a Cadillac. A whole bunch of people are going to win trips to the Grey Cup and other things. Just a super opportunity to win. And you're automatically entered once you buy your ticket in the regular draw.
Yeah, that's right. And, of course, the regular draw, you did some tweaking this year. We got three big cash prizes this year.
Yeah, Michael, what we really have is we're going to give away $850,000 in cash.
Wow.
There's going to be $450,000 in the final draw, three prizes, one for $250,000, one for $150,000, and another for $50,000. On top of that, there's going to be an estimated $350,000 in the 50-50 draw. And as you know, Michael, we've added a new December cash calendar where we're going to give away $50,000 over the month of December, with a major prize of $15,000 on Christmas Day. What a great Christmas present that would be. So $850,000 in cash. Then we've got about $1.5 million of other prizes. 14 brand new GM and Ford vehicles, camper trailer, all-terrain vehicle, sports boat, something for everyone, all kinds of electronic prizes. We've got so many prizes. We've got 1,330 prizes all together. And I got a feeling somebody listening for the game today or after the game or even early next week buying their ticket are going to win a major prize.
All right. You get your tickets by going down to the ticket office in person and then maybe stop by the Rider store and get some paraphernalia and have the whole Rider pack there for you. Also, you can go to friendsoftheriders.com or call 1-800-668-1999, and it's a win-win situation. You can win something, and the money goes to the bottom line of the football club. Thanks for this, Tom.
Thank you, Michael.
Everybody, and welcome to Rough Rider Game Day across the Saskatchewan Rough Riders Radio Network, brought to you by KFC and Waxy's Bobcat. I'm Michael Ball along with Mike McCullough, and tonight, this morning, the Saskatchewan Rough Riders take on the Montreal Alouettes with a chance to move two games up on Edmonton and Winnipeg for second in the CFL's West. The Riders, of course, coming off a nail-biting victory over the Toronto Argonauts, 30-29, and they'll face Johnny Football for the first time ever. Manziel, through three starts, has not thrown a touchdown pass versus five interceptions, and his offensive line has given up 48 sacks this year, something the Riders are pretty good at doing. So we'll see how this one shakes out today from Montreal, where the Rough Riders have not been very good as of late. They're 1-5 in their last six contests. The last time they won in Montreal, 2015, when a guy by the name of Keith Price was the Riders' starting quarterback, and a guy by the name of Brandon Bridge was the Alouettes' starting quarterback. So lots to be determined in Montreal, and it might not be as easy as a win as you think it might be. Coming up on Rough Rider Game Day, we're going to talk to Marcus Thigpen in our Rider Rewind segment. He had another big game last week for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. In our Where Are They Now segment, we'll hear from Matt Dominguez. Luke Mulliner live from Montreal. We'll also be live on the phone with Darian Durant and the Devils Take. Nick Lewis stopping by as well, and much, much more. This is Rough Rider Game Day on the Riders Radio Network. And welcome to Rough Rider Game Day on the Rough Riders Radio Network. It is Michael Ball along with Mike McCullough. And Mike, we're sitting here on a Sunday morning just after 8 o'clock. The CFL's done a pretty good job of not going up against the NFL. I don't know why they're doing, and especially in a market like Montreal, why are we doing this?
I'm not sure. I guess because it's the Riders, I think, okay, we can compete somewhat with the Riders, but
yeah,
I don't understand. I think we should just make the Thursday to Saturday loop, kind of the CFL loop, but yeah, I've been doing it for years. Yeah, they're getting better at it, obviously, and I even think, I was driving on the way here, I was thinking they should make the playoff game Saturdays, too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, just enough with trying to go against NFL. It's just, it's not. It's
you're not
going to
do it. And no. I know there's people listening going, well, we're the CFL. We care about the CFL. Yes, I know. But by and large, people, even Rider fans, are wrapped up in fantasy football and wrapped up in the American game because of that.
Yeah.
That it's just, you're fighting a losing battle.
Yeah. We're trying to get more fans. Like, the on the fence fans are going to watch the NFL.
Yeah.
Right? We want to try to get those fans watching the CFL.
It's like a Mike and Mike's burger shop setting up next to McDonald's. We might think we have better burgers and we might actually have better.
We probably would.
We probably have better burgers.
But even we would go to McDonald's and be like, man, these are some good burgers.
That's right. So the Rough Riders come in and, you know, they're coming in against the Montreal Alouettes, and we initially say they should smoke them. But, you know, Montreal, there's something about that trip out east. It's not an easy trip, is it?
No, especially the back-to-backs, being just, you know, having just been out there and playing a very tough and very close game that they could have lost.
Yeah.
And then coming back for a few days and flying right back against, you know, a pretty decent defense overall, Montreal. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, there's still a tire fire, you know, behind the scenes. So,
yeah.
It should be a win, but it's just, one of those trap games. Like, we almost got trapped last week, and it could happen this week, but I hope not.
The last time the Riders won there was 2015 when Keith Price was the quarterback. I think it went to overtime, if I'm not mistaken. Keith Price was the quarterback, and Brandon Bridge was the Alouettes quarterback. So it's been a long time.
Sounds like 20 years ago, Keith
Doesn't
Price.
Doesn't it? Doesn't it?
What?
Doesn't it?
I mean, I think, you know, in the last 20 years, I think we've probably won there maybe four times.
Yeah.
Off the top of my head, I can think.
What makes that? Is it the city itself? Guys, it's hard to keep 20-something-year-old
guys.
Well,
I think that's some of it. Back when I was playing, it was the Calvillo factor, obviously.
Yeah.
They were just a great team. But now, yeah, I think even just the long trip out there and guys kind of getting to Montreal and getting a little, played out a little bit before the game. You know, it's a tough trip. Fun trip at times, but tough trip.
How does yesterday's game affect your mindset going into this game? Because, you know, like, okay, so on the one side of things, you're looking at, like, you know what? And you shouldn't look at it this way, because they came in here and gave Mike Sherman his first victory. Remember when he's trying to take the headset off and stuff?
Oh, God,
and that was back in June. And you were thinking at one point, that'll be the only game the Alouettes win all year. They've won two since. But so you shouldn't look past them. But you're also looking at it, go, like, we should win this game. And then you're looking at what Edmonton didn't do yesterday. And you can move two full games up on Edmonton and Winnipeg for second place. So is there a trap game factor here?
I mean, I'm hoping that game yesterday will kind of help spark them to think, okay, man, if we can take this and we're two solid games ahead of both Winnipeg and Edmonton, like, that's a big deal. Like, yesterday's games, especially that Edmonton-Winnipeg game, that could be a big decider for the playoff race. I mean, that was pretty decisive on Winnipeg's part. I mean, I know they
killed them.
We kind of picked them earlier, you know, in the year when they, as a good team and being one of the top teams, they had that 5-game slump, but now they seem to be coming back, and Edmonton just seems to be kind of just slowing down. So I'm not sure really what happened over there, but this would be a big game. Go two games up with about, three games to play
after that.
That'd be huge.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the Riders will be playing their last, home? No, they'll play BC back here one more time.
Yeah,
right?
I think it's the 8th and the 27th.
Yeah, they play
it?
BC back here. Yeah, that's right. Because it's bumped up a week. So we've got two more home games.
So we have four more games after this one.
So we got this game here. Then we got Calgary.
Yeah.
Winnipeg, both on the road. We've got Edmonton,
BC
here. So four games after this. So it's and I'll tell you what, that Winnipeg game is going to be interesting too. I mean, if they keep in the mix here.
Yeah, I mean, Nichols maybe coming back. Obviously, he didn't have, you know,
he didn't have a great
day,
game,
but
yet.
It's just about winning the games, and he isn't looking bad. But I saw that stat from last week during the game. They said, which is now the last 2 years with or without Dressler. So without Dressler, they're 1-10. With him now, they're 13-6. So
yeah.
That's a telling stat. I mean, it's not just a coincidence, right? Like, it's not over just a couple games. We're talking 30 games here.
Well, and I love Dressler. He's your friend, and I love him. But does he, at 33 with his injury history, does he scare defenses enough to change their strategy? Or what is it?
I don't know if it's necessarily like a deep threat, but it's just an overall threat. But I think it's more just for the other side of things, like having a stable guy in the locker room, you know, a quarterback knowing, you know, always having a guy he knows where he's going to be when he's supposed to be there. Just a good locker room guy, a great teammate, guys. You know, he's a guy that people look up to and watch, and he leads by example. So having those guys in the lineup, there's no, like, statistical number where you can say, oh, is proficiency rating and blah, blah, all that. There's no metric. It's just, it's a matter, I think, of psychology, just having a guy like that in the lineup.
Okay, so let me ask you from a psychology standpoint, because we have a guy like that on our team, yeah. Rob Begg, okay? But he's not seeing the field much. Mm-hmm. As a young guy in that locker room, does the guy who gets on, because Dressler's been in the dressing room, Dressler's been there even though he's hurt, but does his credibility go up more when he's on the field? Do you know what I mean? Like, he can preach to you on the sidelines in the locker room, but when he's on the field, does his credibility as a young guy go up for you in your eyes? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I don't know if it's necessarily credibility. I don't know if that's the right word, but I think it's more his influence, let's say. Yeah, I think
his words have more meaning when he's actually on the field with you battling.
Well, I don't know if it's so much words. I think it's just seeing him and watching him do his craft, right? Yeah. And knowing, like, because... like I said, with Roosevelt out, you know, if, you know, Bag's on the 46, I'm hoping he's playing. I don't know.
I don't know either.
But, I mean, they technically could have five young receivers in there that are either in their first year with the Riders, I think, or the first year overall. Yeah. That's scary for a quarterback, right?
Yeah.
You know, to have a calming influence and someone who can direct traffic like Bag in there, that would be very helpful for the offense as a whole, but especially Calero.
I'm interested in seeing Kenny Shaw's back, the 26-year-old who tore his knee up. He had a 1,000-yard receiver, 1,000-yard season, I think, before he got hurt.
Was that Edmonton? Or
I believe it was Montreal. Edmonton. He started in Toronto, and he's bounced around between Edmonton and Montreal, but he had a 1,000-yard 1,000-yard season. So I'm interested to see what's going to happen with him today.
Yeah, but once again, now we're still introducing a new guy to the offense. He's an athlete. You know, Evans is a rookie. Stanford is a little inexperienced, and Williams Lambert's a rookie, and so it concerns me. There's great athleticism there, but once again, not having kind of the experience, especially on a kind of a back-to-back road game like this, is dangerous.
It's crazy how we thought this offense was going to be going into the season to what it is now, like, just in terms of personnel.
Yeah, I mean, the athleticism is off the charts, but once again, we're just, I mean, like, if we can keep this offense together, which, you know, in the Jones era is kind of tough because they're always moving and shaking so much. But if we can keep it, this kind of athleticism together for a few years, like, this offense, you know, 3 years from now could be deadly. But it's just a matter of, can we make it work now?
But I think 70% of the roster is free agents after this year.
Yeah, it's weird. It just seems to be so much turnover. You know?
Well, they've changed the rules too, right? Because of this American Alliance of Football, they're letting the contracts be a little bit more flexible, right?
Yeah,
So letting guys get out of their contracts early. In terms of the defense, we'll get into some stats later. They've been real good.
But
lately, they haven't been. Like, lately, they've fallen off. My concern is does this offense have enough to pick up a defense? I mean, today they probably will, maybe. I don't know. Montreal's got a decent defense. But do we have enough to pick up the offense when they fall? That's our defense when they fall.
Yeah, that is the problem. I mean, it's a matter of – it's not so much do we have it when they fall. It's more or less can we just make sure the defense doesn't fall too much. You know, the offense, I don't think they have enough to – on a game-in basis to, you know, turn it up and take the game over. I think they have enough to keep us close to the game and, you know, allow us to keep winning games. But they're definitely not a team where if the defense struggles and has a couple bad series that we can just kind of shoot the lights out and get back into it.
I mean, the Eskimos, you asked earlier, what's wrong with the Eskimos? I think it starts with Jason Moss. They're not winning anything with that guy.
I know, which is a waste of a Mike Riley, you know, having that clown running around the sidelines throwing Gatorade containers. And it's, I don't know, it's absolutely ridiculous.
They've definitely stubbed their toe the last little while. They look, it's funny because you've said this before too. It's usually the hottest team and the healthiest team that does something at the end. Mm-hmm. The Rough Riders have been hot since, and it's like last year, they've been hot since they had kind of a turnaround gain at the midpoint last year. Same thing this year. And the Eskimos, they're banged up now. Duke Williams is probably out for a while with a shoulder injury.
Shoulder injury.
I mean, look at Calgary. Eric Rogers might be on the way back, but what's he going to be like? And then you lose DeVaris Daniels and you lose Kamar Jordan. But Calgary the beat goes on,
they
right?
Just keep on keeping on, man. Yeah. I don't know. It's just, it's unbelievable watching them do what they do. And Bo Levi, what's he, 66-15 now?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Hey, one guy that has been a big driving force for the Riders when he gets his hands on the ball is none other than Marcus Thigpen. Thigpen has now recorded two runs of 80-plus yards this season, the first time in 24 years that a CFL player had more than one in a single season. The last was Corey Philpott in 1994. For the BC Lions with runs of 87 and 80. Of course, Thigpen is an 80 and 82-yarder. 82-yarder came last week. And let's go back to last week with Marcus Thigpen and Rider Rewind. Uh, Time now for Rider Rewind. And we talked last week, and I said, Marcus Thigpen, that every time you're on the field, you make a play, and you did it again. Walk me through that play.
Well, it's something that we practiced all week. And it was the crazy thing is it actually hit just like that in practice, you know. And I feel like Dan did a great job on his pull. Who else was up there? Josiah did a great job holding his block, and then Thad came from the backside and got a cutoff block. It was almost questionable. I know a lot of people said it might have been a block in the back, but, you know, anytime I see myself one-on-one with a guy, I know I can make him miss and just outrun the rest. And I seen a guy trying to pursue over top number 26 real fast, so I said I can cut back on him. And, you know, it was just nice to see it open up like that, you know.
Let me ask you something, because you take care of your body. We talked about that last week.
Yes,
but
sir.
You're a 32-year-old guy blowing down the field past people. Do you even say to yourself sometimes, man, how am I still doing this? Do you say that to yourself?
You know what? I do. Yeah, I mean, like, because I train so hard.
Yeah.
I train really, really hard in the off season. Even during the season, during the off days, I train really hard. And to see myself come out here and replicate those same things, I do kind of wow myself sometimes. Like, wow, I still can do this, you know, at full speed at this age, and I feel great. Like, I feel like I'm in my 20s still.
That's awesome, man. And we'll talk about, you know, how you almost got out of football for a second. But I want to go back to one guy who's kind of been much maligned since he was drafted first overall here, Josiah St. John. Doesn't get a lot of street cred. You gave him some cred.
Of
it's
course.
Nice to see a guy like that make a big play in a big game.
Yeah, Josiah and I are really good friends off the field as well.
Yeah.
Like, we go out to eat all the time, but just to see him out there and doing great is a testament to his character and the things that he's been through. He's been battling some things too, trying to get on the field, and him to go out there and produce, you know, I definitely give him credit. The whole offensive line, honestly.
No, I'm not looking for anything inflammatory here, but I'm the guy that takes the calls after the game, and I said, you know, Marcus Thigpen is a guy that is a weapon, and just even for a sign of respect to have him on the field all the time. I know you're a team guy. I'm not asking you to get into war words with anybody, but do you sometimes, is it frustrating for you when you make a couple big plays and you're not on the field more than maybe you probably like?
Oh yeah, it's definitely frustrating. You know, I think any player that feel like they can produce as an athlete wants to be on the field. But like I said, like you said, I'm a team guy, and the coaches, they see something that I don't see, you know, and that's why I'm a player and they're a coach. So whatever they ask me to do, I'll make sure I'm ready. And when my number is called, I take advantage of those opportunities. But me personally, I would like to be on the field way more.
Is there something in your game that you'd like to polish up, that you're always looking to get better? Is there something you want to, you know, when you critique yourself, that you want to do better?
My biggest critique has always been blitz protection. So I've always been like a lighter, smaller guy and going against bigger guys. So I feel like I'm doing a really good job at it now, but definitely want to continue proving there and hitting the holes a little bit harder. But those would be like the two main things I feel like I need to work on.
Okay, so there was a point here, I was just reading on Facebook, because we're Facebook friends, where you were gonna pack it in. You'd gone through a divorce and it was a low time in your life. Just tell us about that.
I found out that my wife was, you know, having an affair for, you know, a while, and it kind of messed me up bad, like really bad, you know, just being separate from her and my kids, because we've been together for 15 years, but we was married for 8. So I was at the point where I was like, you know, I just want to just hang it up. Like, my mind wasn't there. I didn't want to train. I didn't know. I didn't know what to do. You know what I mean? I was just kind of lost. But, you know, I got to talking to my coaches from high school, talked to some of my good friends, and they were just telling me to whatever it is that I wanted to do, that they was, you know, stay by my side, but they feel like I could still play the game. So, you know, I made a decision after seeing one of KG videos, like I mentioned before.
Yeah.
And the passion started coming back, and I'm like, you know what, I still feel like I got a lot left. I haven't sustained any serious injuries. My body's in great shape, so why not give it a try? You know, you only get one life to live, and this is my passion. So, you know, I came out here and seen what I can do. Coaches liked it, and I felt really good where I was at, and, you know, the rest was history.
Do you get to see your kids much? I know football, it's tough because you're away, you know, playing. Do you see your kids much? Has that been a tough thing for you?
That's really, really been tough, because after the divorce, she's been a little spiteful, you know, so it's kind of hard to get phone calls or text messages back. So I don't see them often during the season, but when I go home in the off season, I do get to see them as much as I want.
Well, we're glad you're part of our family, and keep her going, big man.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Now for our Where Are They Now feature, and we're speaking with former Rider great Matt Dominguez, old number 88. How are you today, Matt?
I'm good.
What would you give to play in the stadium as it is today, that new stadium?
You know, I've said it a few times. Those guys do not know how good they have it. They have no idea how awesome the facilities there in. You know, it's like your parents, right? When you used to get in the old station wagon, and they're like, oh, you guys have belt buckles, you have seat belts now.
Yeah,
you used to not have those things.
I remember sitting in the station wagon. Funny you say that. I used to sit in the station wagon at the very back, facing oncoming traffic. So if somebody rear-ended you, you'd be kissing their bumper. You know what I mean? I couldn't believe that.
Yeah, it's over for you. Like, you have no idea how much better it is now.
What was it like for you, Matt Dominguez, when you first showed up to Saskatchewan and showed up at Taylor Field?
I had just come from the Denver Broncos. That was my last professional stop. And Denver had opened up a brand new facility. And so to go from that to Taylor Field, where Taylor Field, the interior of Taylor Field, the locker rooms, like my high school had better locker rooms. You know, my university had better locker rooms. And so the facilities was just a big downgrade. But outside of that, the fans kind of made up for it because, you know, the love of the team, you know, you don't really think about those kind of things.
Yeah, so let me ask you, is that why you stuck around? Is that why you're still in our community, because of the fans and because of the community?
Well, you know what? Two of my kids were born here, and Matthew is my oldest. He was, you know, one when I signed my longer contract. So all they really know is here, and it's a great place to raise kids. And so when I retired, it just worked out better for us to stay.
Any regrets for you during your playing career with the Rough Riders? What was your regret? You know, when I look at your career, I often wanted, like with many receivers, I wonder what it would be like if you could play with one quarterback over a stretch. Because you had, like, what, 9 billion?
Yeah, you know what, I've talked to several other guys about it. You know, I played for the Riders, 5 years, and I caught a pass from 9 different guys. And I just wanted, the only regret, I mean, I'm thankful for whatever, you know, professional career that the good Lord's blessed me with. But I sure would have liked to have an offense that the last, you know, 5 years of Rider offenses has been, you know, right when, you know, the 2013 season, the way that they were slinging it around the yard, and, you know, with the new rules to be able to folks not hold you, like, I would have loved to have some of that.
Who did you hate going against when you were playing? Like, who held you? Who got under your skin?
You know, the guy that got under my skin, his name was Malcolm Frank from Edmonton, and all he did was hold. Like, it was physically just grab you. And what ended up happening for me was, once I got beyond, you know, what he wanted to do, then the BC Lions actually had a secondary that was awesome. They had 4 guys that were really, really good. And as a whole, those guys were, you know, as a unit, you had to really come ready to play.
You know, I'm looking at your career, and I think of two maybe kind of bitter moments for you. One might be bittersweet. You had an unbelievable year, but in 2007 got injured and couldn't win the Grey Cup, per se, actually being on the field. How tough was that day for you in Toronto?
It wasn't actually that tough. I got to be honest. I had known for several weeks that I was actually not going to play. So that was, you know, that was one thing. And then for us to go through the process to actually win it, you know, I had been here, you know, I had already been part of the Riders 3 years. And so that's, you know, 20 games of you know, trying to grind it out. And there were a lot of vets, you know, Mikowski, Zarka, those kind of guys that were in O'Day that were really, you know, long in the tooth and didn't know if they're going to get one. So for us to finally, you know, punch through and to get one, it was a great day.
Yeah, for sure. It was a great day. And, of course, you did a lot to get the team to that point. How much coaching and how much insight did you give during that game?
Well, that's what kind of my role was at the time, was I just came kind of a de facto coach. We had some, you know, some guys, you know, Fantus early on in his career. We had DJ Flick. We had some guys that were really, you know, in their primes almost. And, you know, my thing was to kind of provide information, keep the levity, make sure it's not too tight, and guys just to go out and play. And, you know, at that time, that's kind of what we did.
Forgive me, I'm getting older, but I think you were part of the 2004 Rough Rider team that went to BC, and McCallum missed an 18-yard field goal, and probably Henry's best game as a Saskatchewan Rough Rider. You know, you talked about finally getting Geno punched through and get that Grey Cup. He was the guy crying in the locker room after, because I imagine with a lot of you guys, because really, you guys should have won that game and been in the Grey Cup.
Well, His reaction to that game in the locker room, I will literally never forget. As you brought it up now, I can still hear the grown man sobs and moans that was coming out of that locker room. And I think that we're all prepared to lose, but how you lose, makes it tough sometimes. And like you said, we had a very, very good game. We had fought. It was a back and forth game, and then to lose it like that was a killer for a lot of guys.
Speaking of coaching, I know you're doing some coaching in the community. Tell me about that, and how much of a kick do you get out of that? Because I know you're a competitive guy. Do you have to dial it back a bit when you're coaching the young kids?
You know what's funny is I'm actually okay now. Early on, when I first retired, I was still really amped up, and so coaching basketball and football with my kids, I was still really, really super-duper competitive. But now I kind of see, you're downloading new forms and new systems and new processes into these kids, and these are the type of players they're always going to be. And so I really enjoy that. And my club basketball teams are very good. They compete at a high level, and I'm just now coaching the Adam Thunderbirds, and those guys are really good. We've had a pretty solid year, and the biggest thing is to see the actual growth of the players in their games as they go throughout the season, and it's been awesome. I enjoy it.
What's the one message that experienced Matt Dominguez now will tell the young kids, or even tell a young Matt Dominguez? Is there a piece of advice you'd give them?
I always say just to outwork people. That's my thing is to outwork people. You can always watch more film. You can always do. You could always do that extra set. You could always be in the best shape, and you take care of those things. What happens throughout the games? That's reaction. But you can come into the game thoroughly prepared. Yeah. And as a coach, I'd rather have to turn down a kid than I always try to find ways to turn that kid up.
Yeah.
And so it's attitude and hard work.
All right, so I want to get a comment in here quickly. You used to be, of course, a radio analyst with us for a number of years. Mm. Just give me your thoughts on these Rough Riders, and in particular on the offensive side of the ball. How frustrated would Matt Dominguez, the guy who caught from 9 different quarterbacks in 5 seasons, how frustrated would you be playing in this offense right now?
Well, you know what? I always kind of temper some of that with you want to make a meal, but you got to make sure you have the ingredients for the meal. And – you know, with early on, is Daron Carter in the offense? Is he only playing defense? Is Caleros hurt? How long is he going to be hurt? How many linemen? You know, it was all kinds of, up in the air type things. And only recently have they really had, a consistent lineup. Okay. And so I think there's some identity things. And then it's the time of year where everybody's starting to get film. They all got film on you now.
Yeah.
And so they allow you defenses, only allow you to do certain things now. They try to take away the stuff that you do well. Yeah. And so what I would preface everything with everybody is, those guys, they got coaches too. And the other team's got coaches. They watch film now too. And we have some very good athletes, and we got to get those guys the ball in space. But too many of us grow up playing Madden, and we want 40-10 games.
Yeah.
And we got to get past that. That's not the kind of team we got. We got a team that doesn't really have an identity, and because of that, we got to grind it out, and that's okay. But you got to go into it knowing that your team's got to grind it out.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. Hey, I wanted to ask you this though, because this would be a great question to ask you. We got a lot of young receivers on our team, and when you came to this league, you'd played in the NFL, so you had a bit of NFL or pro experience, so to speak. But some of these guys, Jordan Williams-Lambert, even Shaq Evans, and of course we're talking about the young guy now, Kyron Moore. They're feeling their way through this thing, and some of them, the young guys, college guys, they're kind of hitting a wall now because they've played more games than they've ever played. For you, what was the biggest thing that you had to adjust to on the fly and learn and adjust to?
One of the things that everybody kind of gets caught up in is getting themselves open. All right, plays aren't designed, for everybody to be open. I guess that's one of the things that's a misconception, and I'll argue with anybody about it, is, some guys, because based on the play, they're running off coverage to let somebody underneath open up, mm-hmm. or vice versa. Somebody's doing something underneath, they're rubbing somebody, that's coming across to get them open. And so guys, new guys, or young guys have always been the guy. You know, you've always been the star of your team. If you've made it to the next level, you've had some level of success at a lower level. And you're usually the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is these guys are all trying to be the man, and that's not how plays are designed. Plays are designed to get one or two dudes open, and when your number's called, make the damn play.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happening is everybody's always trying to be open and always trying to do the thing, and that sometimes sacrifices the integrity of the spacing of where you're supposed to be, the timing of where you're supposed to be, and some of these things. And I'm not saying it's happened in every play, but there are critical times of the game where you can see that someone's not really where they're supposed to be.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Matt Dominguez. Okay, how long have you been in the real estate game, and where can they find you if they want to get in the real estate game?
Oh, man, I've been doing it 10 years. Now on my own at RE/MAX. So, yeah, they can just give me a shout anytime. You can just go to the RE/MAX website, or some of my signs are around here in Regina. You can always catch me.
Hey, one last thing. They always seem to get you on the big kiss cam at the games. So you were a little slow kissing the wife the last game. Did you hear about that?
No. You know what's hilarious? The last game was my daughter.
Okay.
Okay. So what it was I was like, do I embarrass my daughter or do I go in and get booed from everybody?
Yeah.
I went full dad mode, and I'm going to embarrass her.
Yeah, that's good. I like that. Well, the one year there, you picked your beer over your wife, I thought I saw.
That is hilarious, and no, I did not, because I would not have been able to go home. Because, number two, I don't drink beer, so I know that's a joke. But, hey, if they show me again on the kiss cam, I got something prepared.
Okay, good.
I actually do have something prepared now.
That's good. Well, that's a little tip for them when they're listening to this broadcast. Thanks for this, Matt. I appreciate it.
All right, Boz. We'll see you.
All right, time here for profiles with Willie Jefferson. Now, have you always been tall? I know you weren't tall when you were born, but like, when did you start reaching these heights, man?
I started being like the tall guy, I want to say like seventh grade summer. So seventh grade going to like eighth grade, I was always like that small forward, power forward type of basketball player, like receiver and stuff like that. But my seventh grade summer going into my eighth grade year, I became that power forward. Dominant center type player.
Now, was that a good thing or a bad thing? Was there any insecurity with that, being the tallest kid in the class, being the tallest guy in the school?
Nah, man. Like, I was always one of those guys that was good with everybody in the school. Everybody in the school knew me. I wasn't just like an athlete, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I had friends that weren't athletes and stuff like that. So, you know what I'm saying? I was pretty much well known. And when I made my growth spurt, people pretty much knew I was gonna fall into sports and be good at it. So,
how big are your feet?
Size 14.
Size, and how long have they been that big for?
I've been wearing a size 14 since, I want to say, like 12th grade.
12th grade?
Yeah.
Okay, so let me ask you a question. You had that long touchdown run in the Banjo Bowl. What's better, pick six or when you're a receiver going deep and catching a ball?
Pick six.
Yeah?
Every time. You know I'm saying, just because it's change of position, you know what I'm saying, you get to show your athleticism.
Yeah.
And just pretty much all around. Attributes, you know what I'm saying? Catching the ball, running with the ball, you know what I'm saying? Getting away from defenders and stuff like that, and also having the opportunity to finish.
What's your favorite thing to do away from the football field?
Favorite thing to do away from the football field now is just be around my wife and my baby girl. You know what I'm saying? She's 5 months, about to be 6 months, and just have an opportunity to see her grow up and see how babies change over a day or two, over a week or so, and stuff like that. So,
what's her name?
Kelly Brielle.
That's a nice name. Okay, so let me ask you this question. What's been the eye-opener for you as a father? Anything been a real eye-opener for you?
Just how fast she's changing, how big she's getting. You know, she just started seeing Dada a couple of days ago, so, you know what I'm saying, that's a real milestone for me.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Are you good at changing diapers?
Oh, yeah, I love changing diapers.
You love it?
Yeah, man, just because you know, with football, me being away from practice and me being away for the games and the, like away games and stuff like that. Whenever I had a chance to just get hands on with my daughter and stuff like that, I love it.
That's awesome, man. You know, a lot of guys when they get away on the road, they're young guys, are happy to get on the road. But as a father, maybe you just like to be away and have a little sleep and a little downtime, right?
Oh yeah, most definitely. You know what I'm saying, even when I'm saying it's the same, I'm pretty sure it's the same way with the wives and stuff like that. But as a football player, you know, we don't really get a lot of rest and stuff like that. So when we get home, we try to, you know what I'm saying, pick up the slack for us not being there during the daytime and stuff like that. So when we do get a chance to, you know what I'm saying, get away for the away games and stuff like that, I'm pretty sure all fathers take advantage of that that nice plush hotel room, no wife, no kid, phone on silent, lights off, and just get some good sleep and stuff like that.
I'll get to your roommate in a second on the road, but when back to changing diapers, when you got your beautiful daughter there, 5 months old, you're changing her diaper, sometimes you see the diaper, do you say, how does that come out of something that small?
Oh no, man, I know exactly. I know. I'm saying, like, I'm used to it, man. Like, she just started eating the little foods and stuff like that, so I already know what we put in is gonna come out of it. So man, it's all love. Man.
That's awesome. Hey, so on the road, who do you room with?
Charleston Hughes.
Charleston Hughes. So he's the veteran guy in the league. Does he get say over the room, or you guys divvy it up pretty evenly?
Oh man, I'm saying it's pretty much good how we do it, man. We've been roommates since the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
We always get the same bed, same little routine and stuff like that. Like, you know what I'm saying, he watches a lot of Netflix on his iPad, and then we both watch football on the TV, and I have my own iPad, so I watch my Netflix and stuff like that, so the TV is never a clash. Yeah. It's always on TSN Sports, and then we watch what we want to watch on our iPads.
Okay, two more questions. What are you watching on Netflix? What do you like to watch?
I just finished Ozarks, and also I'm an anime guy, so I watch a lot of anime. So
awesome. And lastly, who's your favorite athlete to watch in football besides Willie Jefferson's game tape?
My favorite, I'm saying I can give it to you either way. I'm saying my favorite CFL player to watch outside of me would have to be Odell Willis and John Bowman. My favorite NFL player to watch, Khalil Mack, Von Miller. Favorite NBA player to watch, James Harden.
Yeah.
Favorite soccer player to watch is probably the guy, I forgot his name. I just go with Ronaldo.
Ronaldo.
I forgot the tall guy that plays in the white and black jersey with the ponytail.
I know who you're talking about. You're slipping my mind.
Yeah, I like him.
Got any hockey guys?
Hockey guys, my boy Ovechkin.
Ovechkin, yeah. You like
and then
him?
My boy from the Oilers.
McDavid.
Yeah,
he's good.
Yeah, he came in pretty much same time I came in the league. So yeah.
He's the Willie Jefferson of hockey.
All right, hey.
Hey, thanks for this, buddy.
Appreciate it so much.
All right, that's Willie Jefferson. All our guests coming to you courtesy of Mr. Lube. Get fast, warranty-approved, top-to-bottom maintenance at any of the three Mr. Lube Regina locations. Our show brought to you by KFC, the new triple grab-and-go packs. Three buckets of finger-licking goodness in one. Easy-to-carry package. Pick it up today, but only for a limited time. And Waxy's Bobcat Pool, Spas, and Landscaping. See them at 1600 Ottawa Street or online at waxysbobcat.com. Coming up, we're going to speak with Luke Molitor. But hey, we talked about a few guys there as we welcome Mike McCullough back in studio here. Now, Mike, Charleston Hughes is a guy that has 13 sacks to lead the league, but he's gone three games without a sack and has not gone four games in a row without a sack since 2015. Now, Montreal's given up 48 sacks, so could cure his bit of a drought here. Should we be concerned about Charleston Hughes falling off a bit here?
No, I don't think so. I mean, he came to a hot start. He's a little older, so not a big concern. He's still drawing double teams and helping out the rest of the defense just by being in the lineup. So, I mean, even if he doesn't get a sack the rest of the way, 13 sacks for a 35-year-old, that's pretty damn good.
I'll tell you, though, that's one thing we kind of, as media especially, get wrapped up in. We get wrapped up, and I read a lot of numbers, but sacks. It's not necessarily sacks. Like last game, he was in the backfield. He was pressuring the quarterback. Sometimes you just don't get there, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's the D-line always goes by sacks, but really it's more just disruptions and doing your job on every single play, which I think Charleston Hughes does just by being out there. You know, the team is cognizant of where he is, which, you know, frees up other guys on the D-line.
You know, this was this interior of the D-line was a area of weakness for this team for a couple of years. But, I mean, with the signing of Zach Evans, Mac Henry's played pretty good this year. I mean, the D-tackles have done a pretty good job by and large.
Yeah, especially considering they're both, you know, Canadian. And having the third guy rotating in steel, it's now it's almost a strength on the defensive side of things. So it's good to have those guys and to kind of solidify that middle, because it's the part of the defense that doesn't get a lot of praise, but it's vital to have a good defense going forward.
Chip Cox of the Montreal Alouettes has recorded 25 tackles in his last three games and is now three back of Baron Simpson with 955 at fourth all time. And Cox has 952 career defensive tackles, like I said, as well as 15 career fumbles. His 392 fumble return yards is number one all time in CFL history. So he's still hanging around there. I don't know how long he's got. Your thoughts on Chip Cox?
I mean, he's a great player. He's definitely Hall of Fame worthy. And, you know, especially in the heyday with Calvillo, he was one of their leaders. And, you know, playing against him, it's tough, but he's also he's dirty and chippy.
Is he dirty? Yeah.
As his name would entail. But no, he's definitely a very great player, very great career, but I think it's come to the end, and this could be the end of it. I mean, he is getting pretty long in the tooth, especially for a DB, but, you know, good on him for lasting as long as he did.
Does it make you feel old when you're watching guys like Chip Cox and Weston Dressler and these guys, Rob Bag, kind of, you know, Darian's done now, although is he done? I don't know.
Hey, come on, Darian's done. Come on.
Anyway, so, like, you know what I mean? Like, does it make you kind of feel old? Like, geez,
It does, you know, especially looking around the league now, seeing, you know, there's some guys left I've played with and played against, but it's few and far between now. So in a couple of years, there'll be no one left that I played with or played against. And it's just like, oh, yeah, I guess I'm as decrepit as I feel.
Would you like to play? Would you like, if you could, you know, start it all over again, have the Mike McCullough 23-year-old body, would you like playing in this football better than back when you played?
If I could get the Mike McCullough 23-year-old body, I would have said, why is this body so slow still? You know what? No, I don't think so. It's a little – I would have gotten a lot of pass interference penalties just because you can't touch receivers. And kind of my thing on second and long was, you know, disrupting routes and disrupting receivers, running backs. So I would have had to adjust my game completely and may not have lasted as long as I did.
Another guy that's really still having a pretty good career is Enoch Mwamba. He's yet to make fewer than three tackles in a game this year, and with 79, is tied for first and is on pace for a career-high 109. Now,
which is like more than half of my career. Yeah, so that's pretty good.
Once again, I mean, a lot of those tackles are downfield when he's making tackles. Like, I'd like to see where the tackles are. Are they from 0 to 3 yards, or are they from 3 to 8 yards? But you still got to make the tackles.
Well, yeah,
right?
It doesn't matter. He's on a bad team, so obviously your stats can be a little bit higher. But, I mean, he's still a very good player. He's a great linebacker, good Canadian linebacker. So I'm happy for him. St. Evex alum, so I'm always following him and rooting for him. You know, it would have been nice to have him still here at times, but we still got our guy Hurl and Judge coming along, so we're happy. But no, I always follow the Canadian linebackers, and I'm happy for him. He's had a nice little career.
We're going to get Luke on the phone here in a bit. I wanted to ask you, the Alouettes look like they're going to go jumbo a lot today. They're going to add a sixth offensive lineman out there, or tight end, to help with the blocking schemes, because the Riders are the best defense in the league in many categories, and the Alouettes are on pace to give up 66 sacks this year. They're at 48. So, I mean, we can talk about Johnny Manziel, and we will, but it all starts up front. So, you know, you put an extra guy on the line, takes a weapon away from Johnny, too.
Yeah, it definitely does. And so, I mean, it could be in our favor. You know, we have a great defensive backfield, so even if they take a weapon away and we have one extra defender kind of roaming around, that could maybe even help us, because our front four is still probably going to get there with enough time. It's gonna cause Manziel some problems.
Now, this team has 8 defensive touchdowns, 4 return touchdowns. Johnny Manziel had a not bad outing last game. He had 212 yards passing, but he has yet to throw a touchdown. He's thrown 5 interceptions. This is not a recipe for success for Johnny Manziel going against this defense.
No. I mean, last game, you know, the numbers don't tell the true story. Watching the game, you could see he should have had 2 touchdowns on him alone. You know, the fumble in the end zone, as well as the pick 6 that was dropped through Randall's hands, and another pick that was dropped. So he had a rougher game than the numbers indicated. You know, we'll see if he's kind of getting a little bit better over time. But, I mean, this game should be a tough one for him against this Rider defense.
Why is it so hard for a guy who was a first-round pick in the National Football League, who was the stud in college, to come up here? Because I always hear this from, the CFL, NFL is way better than the CFL. And I think, by and large, the top-end guys are. You can acknowledge that, too. But your bottom-end guys in the NFL – you know, mid to bottom end guys, I don't think they're a lot better than CFL players, are they?
I don't know. I know, talking to some guys who had played in the league back when I played, we had a linebacker. I can't remember his name was actually. No, and regardless, it was a Saquon or Shaquille or something.
Yeah.
But good guy, and he played a couple years in the NFL, and he basically just said exactly what you did. He said the upper echelon guys are head and shoulders above everybody else.
Yeah.
Whereas here, they're a little closer to everybody else.
Yeah.
But he's like, the rest of it, he's like, it's pretty much the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, he even said, McCullough, you could have played in Division I. I'm like, oh, geez, that's Is that a compliment or are you taking something away from Division One? But, you know, it's just, yeah, I think that's what it is. I think that overall it's not a great distance. There is a distance, but I think that their superstars are just so much better than the rest of their league, as our superstars are fantastic, but they're not, yeah, you know, otherworldly.
You know, I'm watching, we're watching on our screen here in the control room, we've got the NFL ESPN, the pregame show going on here. Mm. And they're going to have a little segment where Johnny Manziel gives some advice to Baker Mayfield, which I don't know if I take Johnny's advice. But back to Manziel, do you think Johnny Manziel has what it takes to be a quarterback in this league, or would you like to see a little bit more from him? Because, you know, we're critiquing Zach Collaros too, and like, look at his offense, it's been in and out. Same thing with Johnny's been in and out, he's been hurt. I mean, are we too early in judging Johnny Manziel, or do you think this is about as good as it's gonna get?
I mean, yes or no, yes and no is my thing. You know, he's playing on a very poor team, so it doesn't help. I think his track record the last few years doesn't help either. You know, if his name was John Smith, he probably would have already been out of the league by now.
Yeah.
But, I mean, everybody deserves a second or third chance. You know, he's got some demons and sounds like he might be dealing with it. Hopefully for his sake he is. But, you know, as long as he's not doing things against women or children, I think he deserves a few chances, right?
Yeah.
Because, like I said, they're personal demons and he's trying to get through it. So I kind of root for him on one hand, but the other hand, you know, I'm not rooting for him this week, but we kind of want to see somewhat of a success story for him.
You know, I find interesting too. He's in the league to promote the league. Like, he's in the league. They want him in the league to build the league's credibility, so to speak. And then reporters in Regina want to do a phone interview with him and they denied the phone interview. It's like
the Alouettes did.
Yeah. Well, I don't know it doesn't matter. I don't think if it's Johnny or it's the Alouettes. If I'm the Alouettes, I'm telling Johnny, you're doing the interview. And if it's the Alouettes, like, what are you doing? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing too. If he's kind of still in that mode or still trying to fight some of his personal issues, he's not going to last much longer, you know, but, it's kind of hard to judge any quarterback. I mean, look at all the young quarterbacks around the league. If they're on a poor offensive team, then it's, you know, you want to judge them because they didn't play very well. But I mean, look at the guys around them. So it's kind of a team game, but really the quarterback takes all the blame.
Yeah, because he gets paid the most money. When we come back, we're going to go to Montreal and speak with Luke Molitor for Molitor's Matchup, and we'll be live with Darian Durant on the Doubles Take as well. This is Rough Rider Football on the Saskatchewan Rough Riders Radio Network. And with Mike McCullough, I'm Michael Ball here on Rough Rider Game Day across the Rough Riders Radio Network. A little later on, we'll give away a KFC bucket of chicken, 16-piece meal with fries. A little later on, we'll take your calls, and we're going to head out in the phone lines here in a bit with Luke Molitor. But Mike McCullough, here's an interesting thing. I know you say, I always like the stats. You're the writer of Google. The Alouettes have an unusual record since 2016 in that they have more wins against the West at 7-21 than they do against the East at 6-15. That's the only Eastern team to claim that. And Saskatchewan, they have the best. They have the best record. They're 4-1. In the last five against the Rough Riders. And I want to bring this up. What team always had your number? Like, is that true? Is there a team that just for whatever reason matches up better, or they just seem to have your number?
Montreal always had our number, yeah.
Well, that was a Calvillo factor.
Yeah, it was a Calvillo factor. So obviously, I think we always had problems with them.
Yeah, no, and it was the Calvillo factor. But here's an interesting thing. I just was looking here. With four wins in the last five meetings, like I said, the Alouettes have used a different starting quarterback each time. They've had Glenn Adams Jr., Durant, and Drew Willey. And that's a problem with the Montreal Alouettes. And that's a cautionary tale in not finding that next guy. Because I know they had McPherson behind him for a long time.
Yeah, but he was not good.
And they didn't develop anybody else, right?
Yeah, they should have been developing the whole time. And McPherson, I don't know if they tried to develop him, but it's just more or less he was just an afterthought. He was a short yardage guy for better part of a decade, it seemed like. So it's you're right, that's the problem, is you kind of get stuck on your main guy, but you should always, you know, at least by the time they turn 30, start trying to get someone,
yeah,
you know, at least looking and training and, you know, sitting and watching for 3, 4, 5 years. I don't know,
so go ahead and give me the I told you so.
What I would say to, there's so many.
James Franklin.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, how many times last year were people in here saying, we got to get Franklin?
Every second call, we're gonna get Franklin. I'm like, well, what What proves to you that Franklin's the next thing? Well, yeah, it's because I heard somebody say somebody told them he's going to be good. Like, that's basically what it was. He played five games.
Yeah, and it was all in garbage time.
Yeah, not to say Franklin won't be good, but, I mean, he didn't beat out Bethel McLeod Thompson in Toronto. Yeah. And Thompson, you know, I'll give him credit, he looks pretty solid. Like, he's he could be okay, you know. Yeah. But, I mean, yeah, the whole, well, we'll be good next year. We got Franklin. Okay, well. Let's play more than four games and we'll talk. And that's the same even with Manziel.
Yeah, I mean, like Pipkin had a bad game, okay, but he had some flashes. I mean if
he won a couple games.
If Johnny Manziel's not on the roster and you didn't trade half a team for him, maybe they're still staying with Pipkin and you see what you got, right?
Totally, yeah. I mean, if Johnny had played like Pipkin had in those two wins, they'd be even more excited about Manziel.
Yeah.
But you're right, Manziel's kind of going a bit off his name, and, you know, maybe there could still be something there, but he's no better, no worse than Pipkin, for sure.
Now, your old buddy, I know you've been a big supporter of Cavis Reed.
Oh, yeah. We chat all the time.
So Cavis Reed trades for Johnny Manziel, gives up good personnel and two first-round picks. And when he makes that trade, he says first-round picks are overvalued. Okay? But now he trades Tyrell Sutton to the BC Lions for a second-round pick and pats himself on the back that was a good trade.
Yeah, good job there, Cavis. Yeah, he just... just talks to talk and doesn't know what he's saying. So it's, I mean, trading two first round picks for a backup quarterback. I mean, that's two potential Canadian starters right there, which is a no-no in the CFL.
Yeah.
And then plus that, I mean, you give up Williams and Westerman too.
Yeah.
And they got some guys in return, which is okay. Kind of evened it out, but the two first round picks just.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. He's the human equivalent of a tire fire, you'd say.
All right, our hotline is brought to you by Mr. Lube. Get fast, warranty-approved, top-to-bottom maintenance at any of the three Mr. Lube Regina locations. Let's head out in the Mr. Lube hotline. Now it's time for Mulliner's matchup. Hot out! And we're joined on the phone now by Luke Mulliner. How are you, Luke?
Good, man. How are you guys doing over there?
We're doing well. Now, both Mike and I are yawning. We are yawning here. We are. So it's early. Well, it's more early for Mike than it is for me. I'm used to getting up at 4 in the morning. But I would say that's got to be a factor we got to consider. We talk about the Riders having a tough time with Montreal. That 11 a.m. start, just how tough is it? That's 11 a.m. locally here. That's what your body's tuned to.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, the guy came here a couple of days early. They worked out as soon as the plane landed. And truthfully, 11 a.m. is probably when these guys are rolling in practice anyways around there in Regina time. So I'm not sure, to tell you the truth. I'm not sure how this one plays out. I know that we really struggled for, whenever the game was here, and I just think it's more the flight than anything. So, again, I'm not going to lie, man. I don't know how much of a factor it's going to be just, you know, with these guys having their bodies rolling at around the same time that they're normally at practice.
Yeah, but Luke, you remember from playing days, it those are early games, and do you see anybody there that looks like they might have the Crescent Street flu?
No, you know what? I think they knocked that out on the first day that we came down, Mike. I think that,
okay.
You know, anybody, yeah. So I don't think they treated like a buffet and went back yesterday.
That's a good point, though, that you and Mike both bring up. They went out early to get acclimatized, and part of that acclimation has got to be, hey, we know they're going to go out. We know they're 20-something-year-old guys. We know they get per diem. Let them go out the day before, like 2 days before the game, right?
We call that the Mulliner rule, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know what, though? I mean, you can have that train of thought, but, I mean, me and Mike were also on the same team that came out two days early back with DB and Roy running the ship, and we thought that would be awesome because, yeah, everybody was going to go out that night instead of the night before, and we ended up getting stomped by 45 or something like that anyway.
I think because we just realized they had Calvillo, so we might as well come out and have fun while we're there.
Yeah,
exactly. You know, we talk about Calvillo, and we touched on this, Luke. You may have heard it on the phone when you're waiting there, but, you know, the Alouettes in their four victories against the Riders and 4 out of 5, they've used different quarterbacks every time, and once again, they're using a different quarterback. So, that's been part of the problem with the Alouettes. They don't have stability at that position.
No, you're right. I heard you guys talking about sort of their inability to develop. They had a couple guys when AC was there. and those guys never panned out. I know you mentioned Adrian McPherson, but there was a couple guys behind McPherson that I knew that they really wanted to get rolling. I can't remember the name of one guy. I thought there was one guy there when I was there with him in 2012 that I really thought was going to be the next guy for the Alouettes, and he never worked out. I think it was because of the coaching changes. And that's the thing too, right? Like you have sort of, you know, different OCs, different coaches rolling in and out. It's really been hard to get any stability anywhere on the Montreal Alouettes roster, and I think that's definitely trickled down to the quarterback position.
All right, buddy, I know you got to get ready for the game. So what's your matchup today, Luke Mulliter?
Yeah, well, you know what? It goes back to the quarterbacks. I think that, this is a team that the quarterback's been sacked about 48 times. It's the most in the CFL. They're struggling to protect them. But it's not just the O-line that struggles when it comes to the quarterback sacks. It's the receivers. They don't have the ability to separate. There's nobody that on this Montreal Alouettes team that is a field stretcher. That's a guy that can create separation. They're really good role-playing receivers, but that's all they have. So I think when you look at today and you see Johnny Manziel, obviously he's trying to improve. He's trying to get better. You take him for what it is, though. Right now, all you have to do is contain Johnny Manziel, and I think you got to keep him in the pocket. So my matchup is these defensive ends. These defensive ends have to stay at quarterback level when they're rushing the passer. If you get any higher than the quarterback level, you're going to give an outlet alley to Johnny Manziel to sort of, and that's when he's made his plays. I mean, if you look back at the film from Winnipeg, the best plays he made were the ones where he got outside of the pocket and was able to create. So again, treat it for what he's worth. Don't let him create. Keep him in the pocket. Force him to make throws from the pocket. And I have a feeling you're going to see some balls in the air. They're going to be intercepted if you do that. Hit or hit or miss even when he does get out of the pocket. There was one play that looked amazing on film where he rolled to his left and then came back to his right and lobbed it up and gave it to a receiver for about a 20-yard gain. But you really get the feeling with this team, if he does the same thing, I mean, there's going to be DBs all around and it's going to be like catching punts. So, again, keep him in the pocket. Make sure these defensive ends aren't getting any higher than the quarterback level so he can't escape. And honestly, this should be relatively not easy, but there should be some opportunities for this defense to make an impact, get some turnovers, and maybe even score.
Hey, so was that quarterback Josh Nieswander? Is that the guy you're thinking of?
Yeah. It's a nice one, nice Nieswander. And he was a really – He was a good quarterback, man. But again, I just don't think, there was no stability. I think he had his chance, didn't play well right away. And I think they were still expecting AC's performances when he got his opportunity. They expected any quarterback to go in there and just light it up. And when he didn't right away, I think they lost patience. And for some reason, they're finding patience when it comes to Johnny Manziel. So, hey, right now the Riders got to take advantage of the fact that he's going to be out on the field.
I think it's forced patience because they traded half a team for him. That's why.
Cave is just waiting for his brilliance to come through.
Yeah, that's right.
He'll be waiting a while.
Yeah. He's been forensic. It's amazing.
Well, I'm sorry. And I apologize, Luke, because I know you and him have probably been spending the last couple of days together. So give him my best.
Oh, yeah. Well, me and Kavis, we met for lunch yesterday, and we were going through the RMF roster. He's thinking about bringing a couple of guys.
You guys both talked about your quarterback drafting prowess. You Nieswander fan and him Manziel fan. So.
hey, Luke, have a good broadcast, buddy.
He's still trying to make excuses for 09, Mike.
I know, buddy. Hey, Luke, by the way, I never spoke to you, man. And condolences. I know you knew Lubinjo, I believe. Did you not?
Oh, yeah, man. He was a former roommate, man.
Yeah,
one of the coolest guys I've ever met, man.
I remember you talking about him. So condolences, buddy. I know it's probably tough for you and a lot of other people.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, all right. Thanks, Luke. Yeah, my condolences, too. I didn't realize that. Yeah, he's gone way too soon. Thanks for joining us, and have a good broadcast, okay?
All right, guys.
All right, when we come back, we'll head right back out on the Mr. Lube Hotline and speak with Darian Durant on the Doubles Take. It's Mike McCullough, it's Ballsy, and this is Rough Rider Game Day on the Rough Riders Radio Network. And we're just waiting. Darian Durant joining us on the Mr. Lube Hotline. It's Mike McCullough and Michael Ball. And we're going to mention a couple other things here. I want to bring up some local football. The Huskies lose to the Calgary Dinos yesterday, 33-13. And the Rams win 32-31 when the Bison, it was in overtime. The Bisons were on the verge of tying the game with an extra point. They decided to go for two in overtime.
Really?
And had the ball batted down at the line, so they lose.
I don't hate that.
No, I don't know. They
like,
went.
I like showing some.
They went for that, and so they lose 32-31. But in that game, Noah Pickton set the record for most passing yards in U Sports history. So that's not just Canada West, but yeah.
Yeah, it's over 10,000 yards, isn't it?
It's almost 12.
Almost 12?
Yeah, 12 grand, yeah. Good so he's he had a great career, and it's not quite done yet. His team is 3-2. And, of course, the flag football season wrapped up, the Canadian Football League version of the flag football. What team was your team?
I had the 6-7 Riders and the 10-11 Red Blacks.
Is it hard? Because there are a lot of teams, I'm imagining, right?
This is a lot smaller than the NFL one, though.
Is it?
Yeah, it's
because you only have nine teams, right? Like nine teams to go off for their jerseys.
It's because the registration, like for the other kids, there's a lot of kids in hockey and things like that. So it probably cuts the registration down by about 70%.
Okay.
It's a great league. It's just maybe, there's only about 20%, 30% of the teams that there is in the NFL. So
okay.
It's kind of nice because a lot of the really, good athletes are playing hockey and stuff, so it's a chance for some of those other athletes who kind of get caught up in the wash the NFL flag and kind of show some stuff in the CFL. So it's good for some of these other kids' confidence, and it's a good league.
Yeah, and just talk about that, because you obviously play. When did you start playing high school football? When did you start playing tackle football?
Grade 9, I was 14.
Grade 9, 14.
Yeah.
I like the tackle game too myself, but I think this is a great league. Just for people that are unsure, that don't know if they want to play or not, or they want to learn the game, but they don't want to have the physical side of it yet.
Yeah, for sure. And it's great because it's only like a 6-week commitment. It's only 40 bucks or something. So if the kid doesn't like it, they can hang in for 6 weeks and never have to play again. So it's nice. And they can just play, and they can play the CFL and the NFL, or just do the one or the other. And it's good because some of the bigger kids, they go to tackle, they're pegged as an O lineman.
Right.
But here, it's like you got to catch, you got to snap, you got to throw, you got to do everything. So they get the chance. Every kid gets a chance to do a lot of things that maybe they wouldn't normally get to do.
It's funny you bring that up, because I'm watching my son's team, Riffle, and I coached him back in the RMF days. And there was this one kid that he was a shorter kid and he was kind of stockier. So I'm not going to lie to you, you pigeonhole him and you did evaluations, but you ended up putting him on the O-line. So I put him on the O-line. Well, the kid's playing slot back now, and he's making catches. And his dad's sitting two rows in front of me, go, who is the dumb coach that played him as O-line?
Yeah, he just wanted to show you, and he hates you. So basically you are responsible for his future. Well done.
But I like that idea.
I said, I've got kids who technically, would be, I guess, on the line and tackle, or playing corner and flag, and they learn, okay, you got to be deeper in the deepest, things like that.
Yep.
So every kid, and other than quarterback, is when they get older, 10, 11, there's only a few kids who can throw as well. So we only had it with 3 or 4 different quarterbacks, but every kid played every position other than quarterback on defense, offense. So they'd come off and I'd just say, okay, now you're here. And I just rotate them through every time, and everybody got to play everything. And so it's a little bit more fair that way.
We're just waiting for Darian Durant to join us here.
In terms
of coaching, do you like you're back at your back?
I do, but my
you have to dial it back because you're a pretty competitive
inside
guy.
I'm screaming. And the older kids all get a little more mad at. I don't think I yell at them. I don't really yell at them, no. But I am stern with them. It's just yesterday I was a little stern. I hate losing, and it's not good, but I stifle 90% of it when I go home. It ruins my day, but it's just it's fun, but it's I take all competition.
So let me ask you, because you're an old school guy like me. You're actually a 90-year-old man in a 35-year-old man's body. Yeah, so
I am.
So I talked about playing in today's football in terms of technique and stuff. Would you like to play in today's football in the era of kind of selfishness, where me, I scored a touchdown, look at me, they let the celebrations, or just the mentality of even the way these guys, they practice and that type of stuff?
No, I don't. I can't handle that stuff. It's just, I was brought up, it's a team game. And just talking about my buddy at the hockey evaluations, he was talking about his son and how he's kind of a bit of a hot dog. And we're just, when he came out, I was just saying, don't forget that every goal has to have a good pass. So you should thank the person who sets you up. It's just, there's too much meme. Even in a hockey evaluation my son was at, I'm seeing fist pumps and little celebrations after goals, and these kids are 7 and 8, and it's, nobody's doing anything to stop that. to me is ridiculous.
The one thing I don't like about football is the guy will catch a ball. I even see it in high school. They'll catch a ball, they'll score a touchdown, and those guys jump up and celebrate, and all the receivers get together. You don't really see a lot of linemen celebrating very much. And who goes over to the lineman and says, you know, because if you don't have those hoggies blocking for you, you're not scoring that touchdown.
And I tell my flight kids, I'm like, celebrate as a team. You know, when you score a touchdown or a big play, get together and have fun because you're excited. Don't have some, you know, predetermined celebration because you got a first down. And I told my kids, I'm like my 10, 11, I said, if you're going to hot dog, you're gonna sit down the second half. So we had some great kids, and they were good sportsmen too.
Okay, when we're looking at this Rider team, once again, let's go back to the defense for a second. Jovan Johnson right now back on the starting quarterback. Yeah, and then Elam's back there too now.
Just that strong side just changes up. It's a different pairing every week the last, what, six, 8 weeks?
Yeah.
It's just, it's odd. I don't, you know,
the only thing is you don't really have any cohesion problems there because Jovan's been there for a good chunk and he's a veteran. And Matt Elam's done a pretty good job when he's been in there. So.
Yeah, but I mean, there'll probably be a little bit of cohesion just because, you know, Johnson and Elam haven't played together yet. I don't believe, have they?
Maybe one
on
game.
Field, have they?
Maybe one game.
But I mean, there could be a little bit of cohesion problems. But overall, I mean, they've all come together pretty seamlessly. It's the rest of the defense is the 10 and the 12 are pretty much set in their ways. But just for some reason, that strong half, strong corner keep changing up. And I feel kind of bad for these guys. Even though they have a good game, they don't know if they're going to play the next week. So it's kind of tough to play that way too.
Do you really think the Rough Riders can win with defense? Do you really think
you
they
ask
can
me this
no,
every
no,
week.
No, 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 but do you think they can win a championship with defense?
Yes.
From here on out, they do. You do.
Yeah, I do. I mean, anything can happen in the playoffs. We've seen it, you know, with the 2012 9-9 Argos, or even last year, no one thought the Argos were going to win. I mean, just you got to get to the playoffs in this league. It's a small league. Once you're in the playoffs, anything can happen, and we're going to be in the playoffs, obviously.
Well, yeah, for sure.
And most likely have a home playoff game, it looks like. So, you know, we'll see. But I do believe with a great defense, you know, especially getting a hot run. If they're slowing down now, but if they pick it up, you know, around week 17, for sure.
Let's go to Darian Durant, who is on the Mr. Lube Hotline. Doubles, thanks for joining us. Mike McCullough in here, too, as we're live. So I'll ask you the question I just asked Mike McCullough. He's the defensive guy. Can you just win with defense, Darian?
I don't think so. I think that when you're dealing with Bo Levi, Mike Riley, you know, Winnipeg with Matt Nichols and Coach LaFelice, you have to put some points on the board. I mean, if you were dealing with maybe some of the teams out east, it would be a different story. But I think that just history shows you that when you're dealing with Grey Cup winning quarterbacks like those guys and Mike Riley and Bo Levi, you're going to have to put up some points offensively.
The Riders have a remarkable 6-15 winning percentage and are three games above 500 with an 8-5 record. But check out these stats. They've kind of defied the odds. They've outscored their opponents by 1 point, 333 to 332. They've been outgained on average 340 yards to 316. They have just 19.6 offensive points per game and 18 touchdown drives with a CFL high 79 two and outs. And they've got a touchdown pass to interception ratio of 0.71 to 1. That's 10 touchdowns, 14 interceptions. Those are unheard of numbers and to be 8-5, Darian.
Unheard of. I mean, but that just goes to show you that you can score in other ways. Special teams with Coach Dickinson is doing a great job of, you know, first and foremost, scoring. I mean, when you look at Big Pen, the things he's been able to do, you know, at his age and this point in time in his career is just remarkable in the return game. And, you know, defensive touchdowns are coming, you know, with plenty in the plentiful. So, at the end of the day, they're doing a great job of scoring in other aspects of the game, and, you know, they're winning games that way.
Darian Durant joining us here for the Devil's Take, along with Mike McCullough. Ask both of you guys this question as we look at this football team and we look at where they're headed. The Saskatchewan Rough Riders with Zach Collaros, and you look at what he's been doing. Are you confident he's on the right path? It was kind of, you know, it was a good game last week, but it wasn't a spectacular game. It was a good game, but is that basically what we're going to get from this offense, just a good game?
I think that's what you're seeing. That's the pattern of things. You know, I think that's what Chris Jones is preaching in that meeting room, just for that offense, just to, you know, try to keep the field position decent, score, you know, one or two touchdowns a game if you can, and just don't hurt us by turning the ball over, pick sixes, you know, fumbles, and setting other team up in good field positions. Those are the things he's telling his offense to, you know, stay away from, to limit the mistakes. So it's just, you know, it's marvelous to watch. And if you look back in history, even though some defensive teams have won Super Bowls or Grey Cups, I think that the quarterback has been hot at the right time. So we'll see. I mean, Zach has shown throughout his career that he's capable of having big games. He's led that Hamilton team to Grey Cup appearances. So, you know, I heard Mike speaking earlier. It's all about getting right hot at the right time. I wouldn't count Zach out yet because he's a veteran in this league. And, you know, if he can just get hot and find a rhythm at the end of the season, man, anybody can make a run.
Before we let you go, Darren, I'm going to ask you about Manziel in a second, but I'll ask you both this question. Mike, in terms of Marcus Thigpen, we talked about this off the air. This is a guy that had an 80-yard touchdown run this year, 82 last week, a 97-yard kick return, and he's only in sparingly off and on. With a team that lacks so many, you know, perceived weapons where they don't have name guys, right? Would you not be better served having Marcus Thigpen on the field, you know, at least over half of your snaps, even if you're not going
to
use him?
I would like to think so, but it seems the way they're using him is it's working. I mean, he's explosive as heck, and every game he touches the ball, he's taking it for 80 plus yards. So maybe they have a formula there, and possibly, as we talked about off the air, maybe it's his blocking is suspect, so they don't want him back there as much. I don't know, but what they're doing is working. It'd be nice to see if you could continue that over the course of a game, but maybe there's a theory behind it.
They like Trey Mason, I know that, and Trey Mason's been getting better, and he's been good in blitz protection. But, Darian, from a quarterback standpoint, isn't it good to have the defense respect another weapon, even if you're not going to use him all the time?
No question. I believe that, you know, Thigpen should definitely get more touches, but I also hear that Chris Jones is great at managing his guys as far as making sure they're healthy, making sure that they're fresh during the weekend. And, you know, I would like to think that, you know, as the playoffs get closer or, you know, even in the playoff game, that a guy as explosive as Marcus Thigpen is going to get more touches. So we'll see. But hopefully he's just saving them right now, saving his body, making sure that everyone is fresh because, you know, I think Coach Jones has been around long enough to know that it's highly important to make sure your guys are healthy going into the playoffs. So maybe that's a philosophy of his as well.
Lastly, Darian Durant on the Devil's Take here on the Mr. Lube Hotline. Johnny Manziel, are we being too hard on him? Is it the same thing with Zach Collaros where, you know, he really is just trying to find his rhythm because he's been hurt and he's had his receivers in and out? Johnny's playing on a bad team and he's been in and out too. Is it too early? Like, are we being too hard on Johnny Manziel?
I mean, the thing is, I've been over there. I've been in that locker room. And, you know, if you just look at the history since Calvillo has retired, I mean, no quarterback has had any success over there. So, you know, I'm, you know, on his side as far as it's unfair to judge him in that aspect. But at the same time, if it was anybody else, you know, those guys would have been maybe one and done if you have a 4 or 5 interception game. You never know. So sometimes I think we're being hard on him. It would be great to see what he could do, you know, not necessarily with another team, but with more weapons, with a better structure, a better locker room, you know, things like that. So it would be interesting to see. But at the same time, I mean, you know, if you look around the league, when guys get other opportunities and they don't have success, they're out of the door right away. So, you know, it's just the nature of the beast, but at the same time, I understand both sides of that.
So, Devils, are you saying you don't believe in the Cavis Reed plan? Don't worry, you can say no comment.
I just, you know, but honestly, there's been trouble over there before Cavis Reed even stepped into that position. So,
you're sweet.
You know, it's just, you know, it's just sad to see that, you know, that team can't get over the hump or get the right situations in place to have a successful franchise. And, you know, it's just going to be hard to judge Johnny Manziel in that locker room.
All right, Darian, thanks for this. We appreciate it. Enjoy the football game, okay?
No problem. Have a good one, guys.
Take care, man. All right, we'll be back with more of Rough Rider Game Day across the Riders Radio Network. I'm joined on the phone line by Holy Cross Crusaders linebacker Ramsey Derbis. Now, Ramsey Derbis was the defensive MVP for the entire Canada Cup tournament held in Calgary this summer, a tournament Saskatchewan won for the first time, I think, in 9 years. Ramsey, what was that experience like?
It was real good. It was a tough one, but like, it's always a grind, but it was just a good, real good experience, and winning gold was everything we wanted.
Yeah, take me through that gold medal game. This team had been to the semifinals the last couple of years, or pardon me, got to the final, but runner-ups the last couple of years, but finally gets over the hump. You know, just tell me about that game and what it felt like to finally win the thing.
Yeah, it was tough. Winning silver was just, it was real awful, and so we just really focused on finishing the job this year, and the game was full of ups and downs, but I think we just knew we worked so hard to win gold, so we were just not going to give up.
Yeah, okay, so you were in the zone in that tournament. Just talk about being in the zone. What's it like to, you know, everything, just the ball just seemed to follow you around. You blocked kicks, you made plays to be the defensive MVP. Tell me about, for you personally.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the personal accolades were really great that tournament, but all that doesn't happen if my teammates don't really do their job. So, I mean, it's all a team effort for me to do my job like they did.
Ramsey Durbus joining us here for the Holy Cross Crusaders, linebacker there. We'll talk about your season in a minute. So with the accolades, as you so correctly described there, with the personal accolades, did you get a lot of feedback from coaches, and have some universities been in contact with you?
Yeah, you definitely, I mean, it's a frenzy with coaches over there. So after performing like that, definitely had a few coaches come and talk to me. And yeah, so that was good.
Any thoughts on where you might want to play football?
No, I have a couple offers, but I'm just waiting for after the season. Then I'll really sit down and evaluate on where I want to go.
Now, I always like to say this to the kids. I say football is a dream and not a plan, in particular professional football, Ramsey. So what do you want to do? What do you want to do off the football field in terms of schoolwork?
Yeah, I used to always think I wanted to go into business, but now I'm kind of thinking to maybe study psychology and then maybe go into sports psychology, something like that.
Excellent. Have you used any counselors or sports psychologists helping you focus for the game?
Yeah, I have. I've always wanted an edge, so I have had help from a sports psychologist, and I love that aspect.
So talk to me about that, and so what does that do for you in terms of getting ready for the game? What do you do? What kind of practices do you do without giving away too much? Do you do a lot of mental focusing in terms of like envisioning what you're going to do on a particular play or something like that?
A bit, yeah. Like, obviously, you got to train your mind on how you want to be focused and read the plays, and I think a big part is just always making sure that you're getting better each week and just working, trying to get an edge in any way you can is really what we work on.
This sport can be really insecure, can it? Even at the young level, like, you can make three great plays and then blow a tackle, and those three great plays don't mean anything because coaches only see the last thing you did, and that last thing you did might cost your team the game. So it can be a roller coaster, can it?
Oh, most definitely. That's why you always got to be locked in for every play, and the most important play is always the next play.
How do you deal with insecurities? Do you have insecurities? Everybody does, I guess, to an extent, but what do you do to kind of de-stress, as it were?
Yeah, I guess everyone, I feel like throughout the game, you just don't have a lot of time to think about, like, messing up. You just got to focus on your job, and those things just take care of themselves.
Ramsey Durbus, linebacker for the Holy Cross Crusaders. Now, what do you think your best attribute is in terms of your play, either maybe, you know, on the field or off the field? What's your best attribute?
My best attribute would be my smarts and then just my work ethic. You know, when you have those two things included, I think it's a good recipe, and so I just work hard, and then I'm always focused, and I'm just trying to get better.
Okay, I haven't seen you play personally. I saw you on tape, but I haven't seen you in person. And for people that are just listening to this podcast and haven't seen the great Ramsey Durbus play, tell me about, you know, who do you emulate your game after? Like, maybe a professional. Who would you play the football like? I'm not asking you to compare yourself to Ray Lewis, but who do you like to play the game like?
Yeah, I think Luke Kuechly, because he's so smart, and he's just always around the ball. And, you know, he's a leader of the defense, and he makes big plays from the middle linebacker spot where, you know, that's tough for a lot of linebackers to do, to make big game-changing plays, and he's just done it consistently.
What's better, pick six or quarterback sack or block punt? Which you like better?
I mean, the pick six, because you're getting points on the board.
What's it like to take down a quarterback to finally get there? It's like getting to the steak and getting to the table and eating that steak, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it feels good, definitely, and then just to let them know that you're coming.
Yeah, absolutely. Is that part? Do you like the trash talk?
No, not a whole bunch. Maybe the odd time a little bit, but not. I'm not much of a trash talker.
Are you a leader, or just are you a vocal leader, or are you a leader by example type of guy?
I'd say both.
Yeah. Well, good.
Say both. Yeah.
Good. Okay. And so then, lastly, let's talk about your team. Your squad is 3-0 heading into this weekend's action. Who do you got this weekend, and what's the team looking like so far?
We play Walter Murray, and our team's looking good. We have a lot of good talent, a lot of young guys stepping up, and some good older veterans who are leading the team well. So it's looking good so far.
How long have you played high school football? When was your first year?
In grade 10.
Grade 10. So do you remember your first game?
My first game, yes, I do.
What do you remember about that first game?
My first interception, I ran it back for about 30, 40 yards, and that was kind of the beginning.
That's awesome, man. So do you kind of, are you soaking it all in as a grade 12 guy coming off a great summer? You're in your last year there at Holy Cross, and my, how the time flies. Are you kind of really soaking in this grade 12 year?
Yeah, I'm trying my best. I mean, you're so consumed all the time with just getting better and focusing on your opponent, but I've definitely tried to take a step back at times and just, you know, really embrace the moment.
What are you going to miss most about high school football when it's done?
Just the atmosphere, playing in the games with the school cheering you on. It's just amazing.
Ramsey Dervis, good luck this week, and good luck the rest of the season. We'll be watching, and we know you're going to have a great rest of the year.
All right, thanks so much.
Time now for Moving the Chains with our friend Nick Lewis, the all-time receptions leader in the Canadian Football League. First off, Nick, how is the boot camps going that you're running in town?
Man, that's going amazing. We're having such a fun time. We're growing together, and it's just good to be around people in the community, get to know some of the men, and inspire the leadership to extend a hand to help others on a daily basis and just become the leaders in their lives.
Okay, so, buddy, how weird is it for you being a Calgary Stampeder legend? And I know you played for the Owls, but we know he is a Calgary Stampeder legend. How weird is it for you to still be kicking around, you know, to be in these parts and helping out this community in Regina, a place where, let's face it, you were hated when you played?
Yeah, I was hated when I played. But, you know, the funny thing is there's one guy, Tim Fox, who actually is a Calgary Stampeder fan. He wears his Calgary hat sometimes, and it's good. You know, we have a good time out there, and, you know, we're all competitive, and we use our competitive edges to try to get the most out of ourselves through competition. So that's just the biggest thing, is being out there having a good time.
Okay, buddy, let's talk about this Riders offense. Is it hard to judge because the quarterback's kind of just getting his rhythm now, but he's been in and out a couple of times, and I'm talking about Zach Collaros, of course. And then, of course, the receiving core has been a mishmash all season long. Is it hard to kind of judge and grade this offense right now?
It is. It's, you know, you had early Jordan and Evan stepping up early, making some big plays. The last few weeks, probably the last month, you have Swerve coming in, making some big catches in the pass game, some big punt returns, and now Naaman's out, so you don't know what to expect. You don't know who's going to be the fifth guy, if it'll be Rob Bagg or how it's going to go out. But, yeah, I think those guys need to gel a little bit more, and they just have to continue to get better. And on a daily basis, get better and get better and get more consistent.
Okay, so what are you liking from the games of Jordan Williams-Lambert, you know, Shaq, and, of course, the other guy you mentioned, Kyron Moore? What do you like about what you're seeing from their game?
You know, Jordan, he's able to stretch the field. He's got a big body. He can go up over the middle and make some catches. You know, Shaq, he just got to get out of his head and just go back to having fun. You know, when you start winning sometimes and there's more and more pressure, you got to have fun. You got to remember it's about having fun. It's about going out and just playing and executing the offense. Get out of his head. He's had a couple of drops. So just start having fun with the guys. And I notice when the team's playing well, the guys will play better. And usually when you're young, that's what happens. When the teams don't play very well, the young guys don't play very well.
You know, normally you'd say the Riders would miss Naaman Roosevelt, and this isn't a shot towards Naaman Roosevelt because I think he's a great receiver and you agree with me, but they haven't used him that much this year, so Naaman Roosevelt not playing this week I don't think is that big of a deal.
It's only a big deal to the fact is with the way they run their offense, if I'm going to take away one guy, I'm going to take away Naaman. Now without Naaman there, it's who do you take away and how does that affect the Riders' offense this week? Because now if they choose to try to take away some other person, you know, how will that affect the Riders' offense and moving the chains? You know, Naaman's presence and his threat of being on the field is important for that offense. Now, is he out making plays like he has in the past? No, but he's also not getting the same opportunities. So it's going to be interesting to see how Montreal chooses to play defense, if they're going to stack the box and say you're not going to run the ball and you're going to have to pass the ball to these young guys to beat us. So we'll see how they plan on playing that defense.
With this offense that's running Saskatchewan, you and I had this conversation actually watching a high school game the other night. So you've got, you know, Mark Trestman's offense used in Toronto, used in a bit in Saskatchewan and Edmonton. Where was the other place we said it's used?
Saskatchewan, Edmonton, Ottawa, BC, yeah, and Toronto.
Okay, so it's used in those places, but
same terminology too.
Yeah. Okay. So you're looking at Mark Trestman, and he's had Ricky Ray, and he's had Anthony Calvillo, and Mike Riley's using the system in Edmonton, and Travis Lule and Jonathan Jennings in BC. Is this as good as it's going to get with Zach Collaros? You need a special quarterback. I'm picking up you need a special quarterback to run this offense. Can Zach be that guy, do you think?
I don't know if it's just a special quarterback. I think it's just the way that the game has changed. When Mark Trestman first came to CFL, it was a very different offense. It was a stretch-the-field offense that allowed the quarterback to start his reads pretty much wherever and progress from there. But with Anthony Calvillo, when you had Jamel Richardson and S.J. Green and Brian Bratton and K-Watt and all these receivers and you're playing press man, it's not hard to pick a receiver and read from there. Now when everybody's playing predominantly cover four or a version of match and there's so many different things going on every play, you see a lot of the younger quarterbacks or the quarterbacks that aren't the elite-level quarterbacks that struggle. And if Edmonton doesn't complete the big ball, the big play, they struggle on offense. And half the time, Mike Riley has to run the ball with the ball to keep drives alive to try to get some momentum going. So it's definitely a different style offense. And
that's Nick Lewis joining us for Moving the Chains across the Rough Riders Radio Network and joining us on the Mr. Lube Hotline. Hey, would you like a 16-piece meal with fries from KFC, one of our major sponsors of Rough Rider Game Day? If you do, call our number 936-6262 in town, toll-free out of town, 1-866-767-0620. This is Rough Rider Game Day across the Rough Riders Radio Network. And welcome back here inside our studios in Regina at 620 CKRM. I want to thank our other affiliates for joining us across the Rough Riders Radio Network, 96.3 Cruise FM in Saskatoon, GX94 in Yorkton. We got 1050 CJNB in North Battleford, 102.3 FM CJNS in Meadow Lake. And of course, we've got 900 CKBI in Prince Albert, and your flagship station for Rough Riders football is 620 CKRM. I want to thank my operator here in Regina, Mark Harrison. Hey, Marky Mark, can you put up on the screen who won the 16-piece meal from KFC? They can maybe have themselves a late afternoon or early supper. Pamela comes up with the 16-piece meal, so congratulations to Pamela from Regina. All right, Mike McCullough joining me in here. And the Rough Riders, this is a big game for them. We talked about this at the start of the broadcast, Mike. They win this game, they are two games clear of Edmonton and Winnipeg. So, you know, that they could really put the nail in the coffin here next week with the Eskimos coming into town. This is a huge game. They got to win this game.
Oh, for sure. I mean, even you look at the Winnipeg, if we win this, we're two games out of Winnipeg, and they got the season series, too.
Yeah, so that's right. That's a big, huge
game. Yeah, and then Edmonton, obviously, it could still be up for grabs. But this is like kind of one of those, you know, deciding games of the season where it can really change a team's fortune for the good or the bad.
So let's go through a couple of scenarios here before we get to the two-minute warning. For the Montreal Alouettes, what do they got? How do they win this game?
I'm trying to think of that. I think they just got to be less sloppy than the Riders, I think, is what they have to bank on. I think it's going to be kind of an ugly game, but the Riders have enough talent that they can kind of get by and win an ugly game, where I don't know if the Alouettes do. Yeah. So, I mean, honestly, I don't know. Like, Montreal should not win this game unless the Riders come and lay a complete goose egg in all three facets.
It's important for the Riders to take the Alouettes out early. They've been outscored 231-114 in the first half this year and are 0-8 when they trail at halftime. It is important for the Riders to get over that early game funk, which we kind of talk about, whether it's St. Catherine Street or whatever, and just kind of what they're doing there.
Yeah.
The longer you let Montreal hang around, the more they think they can win the game.
Especially in Montreal, yeah. So, you know, it'd be really ideal for the Riders to come out with, you know, an opening kind of drive touchdown, or at least some, you know, 10 points in the first quarter to kind of just, you know, kind of kick Montreal while they're down type thing and keep them down. But as you said, if they come out and they're slow and it's a sloppy game, the longer Montreal's in it, the more chance they have. But even if it's a sloppy game, the Riders should win a close game.
Yeah, and I'll get to your prediction in a minute. So the Riders haven't blown anybody out this year. They haven't smoked anybody this year. Would you like to see, from a confidence standpoint, see them drill somebody here today?
It'd be nice. Yeah, I think it'd be good for their confidence, too. You know, kind of going back a week or two ago when Winnipeg was up and the game was sealed, and they, you know, they, I think at the end of the game, didn't have to, but they went for another touchdown and scored.
Yeah.
You know, some people say rubbing it in, but it's more or less trying to gain confidence. And you can see it really carried over this week when they went 30-3.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just those little things, if we could get a little more confidence behind it, especially on the offensive side, and come out and maybe kind of lay a beating on a bad team and get some confidence going, that'd be really good for
them. Well, and last week we expected them to kind of control Toronto. Toronto's, I think, a bit better than Montreal.
I think so.
And they only won by 1 point, and it was a long 56-yard field goal. That kick really turned the demeanor of our call-in show, because had he missed that field goal, it would have been a different week in Riderville. It's time for the Riders, I think, to blow somebody out and get that confidence.
And I think just the small things like Caleros at the end of that game when he downed the football and got the penalty, it's little things like that, Caleros. You know, I like him and I have faith in him, you know, going forward, but I think he needs to really just be smarter in those late game situations. Like in the previous week, he made a mistake, you know, a couple weeks previous, he got hit on that and one blitz we talked about. He's just got to act more like the veteran quarterback that we all know he is and should be.
Mark Harrison, hit that sounder. And you're right, Mike. Really, that is it. For a team that's trying to win with defense and special teams, it's basically how it's been all season, no matter the quarterback. Just don't go out there and screw it up. So, Caleros, make a few plays, but don't do anything to put us in a bad spot.
Yes, for sure. So, especially against this team, you know, he's got a young receiving core this week, so there's going to be a lot more pressure on him to try to, you know, win this game, because a lot of these guys aren't going to be running the right routes or doing what they're supposed to be doing or where they should be, where Caleros thinks they should be. So it's going to be a little more pressure on him, because this is a must-win game and a game that we should win. So he's got to, you know, kind of act like the veteran that he is.
The Riders and the Eskimos use the same type of offense. The Eskimos, though, hit the long ball, and when it doesn't work, they don't win. And we're seeing that lately, and Mike Riley can't save them every week. But I think Zach Caleros will have to maybe keep some plays alive with his legs too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I really do think it's going to be an ugly game. Usually, go to Montreal, it is ugly.
Yeah.
But you know, the Riders should still win by a good 7-10.
I was going to say, do you have a score?
I'm thinking it should be, you know, like 28-18 or 28-20, something like that. It'd be nice if it's going to be more, but I just can't tell. That going into Montreal and going to these back-to-back East games is tough.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, when we come back on the other side, it's going to be Rod and Luke from Montreal as they get their portion of the pregame show rolling. After the game, it's going to be Mike McCullough, Chris Best, and yours truly in the broadcast booth here, as we'll be taking your calls on the Sports Cage Radio Roundtable, which will be brought to you by A&W. I'd like to thank my operator here, Mark Harrison, and his assistant, Nevin Chamney, for getting us going behind the scenes, and all the producers across the Rough Riders radio network. On the other side, it's Rod and Luke from Montreal. We'll talk to you after the game.